With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to Season 9 of the Parenting Aces podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and my guest this week is former UCLA Bruin, men's tennis standout, Carew Sell. I'm so excited to have Carew on the show. We've been trying to make this happen for a couple years now, and now that his latest gig as Naomi Osaka's hitting partner, Naomi Osaka, that Naomi Osaka, U.S. Open women's singles champion this year. What a cool job that Carew has. And I was super excited to have him talk about that, but more importantly, to talk about how important his college tennis career has been to him, not only as a player, but also in his personal growth as a human being, and how he has parlayed that experience and those relationships into some amazing professional opportunities. So for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with former UCLA Bruin, Carew Sell.
Hey, Carew Sell. Thanks so much for finally getting on the podcast. We've been trying to make this happen for a while now.
I know, it's long overdue. Last week was just a little bit crazy after the open, but but yeah, I mean, I feel like I should have done this a while back.
Well, you and I met while you were playing on the team at UCLA, and it's been a while now, but your most recent gig is as the hitting partner for the 2020 U.S. Open women's singles champion, Naomi Osaka. What a cool gig. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's we kind of started this year. Like, she moved to L.A., and, you know, somehow they got my name. I got connected with them. Like, let's do a little tryout. I was kind of in between. I had just kind of quit the tour and was doing a little more coaching and things like that. And, you know, I just thought it was like a really cool opportunity, not just working with her, but I think, you know, being someone who's probably wants to stay in coaching, being in that environment, being with some, you know, her new coach was obviously a guy who was very successful. So, I just kind of took that as a very good experience, you know, for the next, however long I do it. I think I'm going to learn a lot. And, having a slam in pretty much two tournaments that we played this year, we played four tournaments. And, you know, we somehow got this slam. So it was really, really cool to be a part of.
That's amazing. So what does it mean to be a hitting partner? I mean, I've listened to you talk with other people about, you know, more of the specifics of what y'all did right before a match or this or that. But in the bigger picture, you know, when somebody calls you up and says, hey, we want to hire you to be the hitting partner for this top player, I mean, what questions are you asking? What is your job description?
It's a little tricky because I think it really depends on the person you're going to work for. Mm-hmm. Again, I've heard some pretty like bad stories for some women, you know, how they treat their hitting partners, and you know, even coaches can be a little, you know, just shut up and be a hitting partner kind of thing. So it's mostly hitting, you know, it's, and some coaches will, you know, want more feedback. Some coaches will want, you know, just kind of be on your side and don't say anything. I'm lucky that both Naomi and Wim appreciate the feedback. So, you know, I'm more as like at this point, you know, learning and, you know, assisting with however I can. Obviously, like, you know, Wim is the head coach and he makes all the decisions, but I'm opinionated in some way. So like sometimes I go to him and I'm like, look, this is how I see it. This is what I think. Not just bad things, but good things, mostly good things. I'm like, hey, she is I mean, I'm the guy who's taking the beating pretty much. I'm hitting, running, and doing all those things. And I can tell when she's really, really improving certain things. And I mean, it was really from when we started in January to now, I think she's really developed. So I think that's a really fun part of the job. Like, I'm ambitious that way, that I want to see the players I work with, even if it's juniors, to really get better. And just seeing her, it, to a certain extent, winning slams already, three, but still thinking that she has so much to that she can improve. Mm-hmm. It's a cool thought that you're like, oh my God, she's not even at her best yet, and she's already doing this. So I think that's kind of like what excites us, me, the coach, or whoever. So that's really, really fun.
Yeah. And when you say Wim, you mean Wim Fassett, who is Naomi's coach now. And so, as the hitting partner, obviously you're not the coach. There is a coach, but you're on the court, as you said. You're seeing and feeling what's coming off her racket. You're seeing and feeling her movement, her ability to get up to the ball, whatever. And so, I mean, for most players, is the coach looking to the hitting partner for some direct input on, you know, what you are – can contribute to the team and to her development and to her performance? Or, I mean, I know you said some coaches just want you to get out there and return serves and
Just make balls.
Make balls, right?
Yeah. Don't make mistakes. That's pretty much what some players and coaches want.
Yeah.
I think, again, it just kind of comes down to who you are working for in this situation. And I think, I honestly don't think I would be doing this if it was the other way. Because then what am I learning from? I'm just like shutting up and, you know, being on the, so I've been fortunate that, you know, Wim being a younger coach too, he's only, I think 39, 40. And I think he came in with me as well. He was the new guy in December. So we both came in and I kind of gave her the space. There was a lot of people, new people. So I gave her the space to like get to know Wim more and, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, I could tell that Wim was a guy who, you know, appreciated some of the feedback. It didn't really mean I was right or wrong. It was more like, hey, this is what I'm seeing. Like, because at the same time, it is the ways that I'm like, hey, like, this is how I can hurt her kind of easily. Or this is kind of how, you know, she's not really pushing me as much as I feel like she should on this ball. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So I think, I mean, at the end of the day, it really depends on who you're working for. And I'm lucky that in this case, it's really nice and open. The team communicates well. It's not very egotistical in a certain extent, where, you know, sometimes coaches can be a little bit like, no, it's my job. Like, you know, don't do anything. But in this case, it's not. And again, Naomi, it's like, she's so nice and chill, and she doesn't like, you know, she's just kind of like easy to work for. So it's a really nice situation that for me, and I think for everyone that works with her.
Yeah. Like college tennis, Naomi's team is very international. I mean, y'all come from all over the globe, including Naomi herself. So how does that play into things? Are there some cultural things that come up, or has everybody kind of adjusted to one another?
I think everyone's adjusted. I think spending like a month in a house with them was like, you know, then you really see it, how, you know, Yutaka and Nana, who are both Japanese, but really, really Japanese, they really, like, you know, embrace that. And then me and Wim, I actually, like, some of my best friends are French and European, so I do get along well. He's Belgian, but I do get along well with European people. So, like, me and him, like, you know, we'll have a good time together as well. And I think what we do well is Naomi, you know, she likes her time by herself, and she doesn't, not one of those players that like the team needs to be together all the time. So we, you know, we have our freedom to do our things and kind of just like, you know, chill. So if anything, I think that kind of helps in that situation where like everyone's from a different part of the world, and you have your own space to do your thing as well. So it's fun, and you end up learning a lot from, you know, other cultures and other people and how things are, because I think we all have just generalized views of like, oh, how it is to be Japanese, how it is to be Brazilian, how it is to be Belgian, whatever it is. So it's like, it's nice, and it's a good environment to be around.
Did Naomi hire you, or did Wim hire you, or did somebody else?
Her agent, Stuart, was the one who messaged me first.
Okay.
When they, at the time, was in December, I got a bunch of messages. I remember being before the Asian tour, the Asian swing last year. I got a few people texting me like, hey, there's like someone is moving to LA. I can tell you who. They're going to be looking for a hitting partner.
And then that week
I got legit four people. By the fourth call, I was like, look, like tell them I'm available. Just have them reach out to me. Like, this is like literally the fourth time. But then I didn't hear anything from anyone. Mm-hmm. They went to Asia. I can't remember who was coaching her at the time. I think it was just her dad. I don't really know. So I didn't really hear much. And then I think later that year, like I think probably after the Asian swing and all that, I got a text from Stuart. And then, you know, we met up. He was like, hey, let's just do a little tryout in December, see what happens. And we trained actually at UCLA a good amount at that time. And then they were like, okay, I'm going to Australia. You're coming? I was like, yeah, let's do it. So it was very organic. It was nothing was forced. Okay. And, you know, I told them, like, look, I'm in a good situation in LA. Like, to be honest, like, you know, a lot of it I didn't want to give up here. I had a, you know, great schedule working with some kids that I really liked. But, you know, obviously it is something I felt like I had to do. For the learning experience and all that, so it's been really nice. But Naomi doesn't really do much of that stuff. It's all on the agent.
The agents. So, what was the night after the U.S. Open win? What did y'all do? How did y'all celebrate?
It's actually so lame to talk about it because we couldn't really do anything still because Naomi couldn't leave the bubble.
Were you in the bubble? Y'all all had to be in the bubble too, right?
We all had to be in the bubble. So the thing is, Naomi had to, I think she had a lot of like media stuff the next day and had to go back to the site and all that stuff. So they were like, yeah, you just can't go out tonight. Like you can't leave the bubble. And so we were like, so we get.
How anticlimactic.
I know. And I was like, I was the devil on the shoulder, but I was like, okay, fine. Like let's stay in. And we were at a big house and they had like, a bar stocked with stuff, so we just like we end up like, you know, drinking tequila and like ordering pizza and just like having a good time for a while. But at the end of the day, I mean, she was drained. You could tell she was like drained at the end. And so, I mean, you win it, and then you have like we were like there for like 3-4 hours. You know, the team just doing really nothing besides like some pictures, and she was going back and forth. So at the end of the day, I always felt like. You win a tournament like that, it's almost like a weight off your shoulder that sometimes you don't even want to go out. You just kind of want to like, okay, I can finally like stop thinking about it. And then, you know, I feel like you would celebrate maybe like a week later. It would be like a fun thing to do. But I came back to LA the next day. I think we all flew on Sunday because we couldn't be in the house anymore. So
we're sick of each other.
Yeah, we're just like, no, let's get out of here. So yeah, I wanted to get back to LA. I got a puppy recently, so like I had to like come back to him. So I just like left, but it was a good time. I think it's just overall it was a nice time, and you know I think she went and celebrated with her grandma the next day and did all that kind of stuff. So again, we just kind of leave her to do her thing.
Right, that's very cool. Yeah. So speaking of LA, you came to Los Angeles to attend UCLA to play college tennis under Billy Martin. Grant Chen was there, and you had an amazing career at UCLA. You have since been pretty outspoken on social media about college tennis. Jen Brady's success at the U.S. Open this year really opened the door for you to kind of go off a little bit on Twitter, which I love seeing because we need people like you really, you know, holding the banner for college tennis, especially now. What do you feel like the greatest gift or gifts that college tennis gave you that have provided opportunities that you are now able to take advantage of?
I mean, there's so many. So obviously, I mean, it kind of goes, it's like, it's almost like a progression as you get older, like the gifts almost change. But like at the time for me, for example, at 18, I kind of had lost the fire a little bit. You know, I was playing, I was a good junior, but like I just didn't have it in me to go play futures, and my friends were all having a good time. And yeah, like, you know, you have to sacrifice those things, but sometimes you're just not mature enough at that point. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what? I'm getting out of here. I almost like luckily got into UCLA. It was like I was pretty much going somewhere else. I was going to Florida State, and then opened up a spot there. Billy sent me an email. I came without visiting. It was all like very, you know, last
minute. Which is typical, right? Yeah. It's very typical of international players to show up on campus, and that's their first time seeing the campus, meeting the coaches in person, meeting their teammates.
Yeah, and at the time, like, I didn't really know the difference between, like, I remember Florida State being, like, a good school at the time. I think they were, like, top 20, top some. But I didn't really know what was the difference between, you know, you're 5 in the country, 3 in the country. So you know very little. And then by the time I was at UCLA with the team that we had, I mean, we would play, like, someone who was 8 and almost, like, I mean, we got to show up, but we're never going to win. So it was like, it was a different, like, it was just a different thing. And again, like going back to your question, it's like, okay, at the time that really brought like the fire of competing for something that wasn't just for me. I was terrible in the fall because in the fall didn't really matter. It wasn't like a team thing. It was just all individual. But once the dual season started, I was locked in. I loved it. I loved the dual season. I loved the team aspect of it. So I was playing, I mean, I was really playing, you know, just for the team. I wanted a national championship so badly that, like, you know, that gave me fire. And then, you know, off the court stuff, like, you know, you obviously have to worry about, you know, it's just adulting stuff, paying rent and, you know, budgeting and things like that. And obviously school, it's a big part. And I've always been a guy who, at the end of the day, I play it safer than maybe I should, but that's just my personality. And I just wanted to have that backup that I went to college and, you know, I can get a job. And these days, I mean, having a bachelor is almost like, it's almost having a high school diploma at the end of the day. It's the minimum you can get. Right. So, you know, those 4 years I matured a lot, like in the sense of, you know, understanding the work ethic you needed and understanding, you know, the grind on the tour and all those kind of things that at first, you know, seemed like a huge thing. And then when I actually went back to play, they didn't. I mean, the only part that was hard for me was financially, but the other stuff, like, oh, we're traveling, oh, we're playing. It's not, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal because I was much more mature at that point, and I was able to succeed much faster on the tour because of that. So I don't think I would have gotten to the ranking I got if I just had stayed in Brazil. I think I would have quit by like 20. I truly believe that I would have probably have quit by 20. And this way I was like hungry at 24. Still, I still loved it. And I, you know, I worked at Pepperdine before I started playing. So college tennis, like, I really loved it. I really liked, you know, seeing those guys succeeding and I just, you know, again, just not, there's that selfish component of being a tennis player. At the end of the day, you play for yourself. Mm-hmm. And at UCLA, we have our internal competitiveness, but we, you know, we all like played for the same goal at the end of the day. So I think that was really awesome. And also, you know, my best friends, the guys that I text on a daily basis, not just tennis players, but guys that, you know, I met in college and, you know, lived with in college. So, you know, it's been a really rewarding experience, and it's almost like my little, you know, it's your little community. You're always going to have that. UCLA is a thing. I can always go there, watch the matches, Billy, the coaches, seeing the new guys come in. It's always going to be a thing, even if I'm old. And you look at the one, you know, the older alumni, and you're like, you know, what are these guys doing? Like, don't they have like anything else to do? But they love it. They love it. So, and I feel like I'm going to be that guy. So it's a really, really exciting thing. And I mean, again, I couldn't recommend it more. And it really makes me sad seeing this program's being cut right now.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a really bad thing.
It's horrid. And, you know, I tweet about it all the time too, and talk about it on the podcast and other places as well. I don't know what the solution is right now. And I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what the ITA's role is, what USTA's role is to preserve these programs and make sure that these up and coming juniors have college tennis to play when they get to age 18, you know?
Yeah, I don't really know either, because I don't really know the financial, really the nitty and gritty of the financial part of this. But I mean, some of these teams, they're not small schools. I'm sure they have the money. I'm sure they have endowment. They have all these things that, I mean, it has to be a 1% budget cut. Not even like tennis does not cost that much. Like, you know, it's almost like they're using COVID as an excuse to like, oh, we wanted to cut these programs earlier, but like we couldn't really, and now we can say it's COVID. But I mean, right. I even saw it is not tennis, but Stanford cut some big programs. What would was it soccer and like I don't know if swimming, like big programs. I'm like, come on, Stanford, you guys make what billions of dollars in endowment every year? Like that you're not, you know, again, this is not football. You're like, you're not spending that much. I mean, football brings revenue, but it's like what, maybe $1 million a year to run a program. And that, again, I don't really know the numbers, but I just find that, what was the last one that got cut? Was it Iowa, or there was a big one that got cut?
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like this is a team I know. Oh, or was it not Iowa? It was Iowa, but there was another one that a friend of mine played. Minnesota? Was it Minnesota that got
cut? Minnesota got cut.
These guys were like top 20, right? I think, recently.
It makes no sense.
I couldn't believe it.
What do you feel like is the responsibility of the alumni of college tennis programs to really get out and speak out and fight for the preservation of these teams? I mean, do you feel a personal responsibility as a Bruin to speak out and say, hey, we can't let these programs go away. We need this.
Yeah, I do. I obviously, you know, I find it hard to believe that UCLA would be cut, you know. I mean, we're just such a historic team, but we never know. You know what I mean?
Right.
You just never know. So, but I do think like I need to speak out, just because there is this misconception, I think, where yes, I went to UCLA. It was a really good school. I mean, we're top five every year, ranked number one in the nation, and all that. And I think a lot of people, even players from Brazil that played in smaller schools, they always ask me how it was and like this and that. And I always tell them, it's like, look, yes, we're a great team, but I guarantee your experience was very similar at whatever school you were. Even if it was smaller, I do think the growth, the personal growth, all those kind of things happen at really any level if you play college tennis. That you know, camaraderie you have with your teammates, all those kind of things happen in pretty much, if you're playing for number 100, and if you're playing for number 10. So when I see these guys getting cut, it's just so many players that, you know, probably played for, you know, all their lives. They got into their, you know, smaller school. Sometimes they're not even small. There's big schools, but with the tennis teams that aren't that great. But they can go out there, play, even if they're not on full rides. Yep. They'll have that experience. And you know, they'll learn from that. They'll probably get a job from it, from being on the tennis team, because like there is the sports kind of, you know, they help you with that kind of stuff. And you know, the employers love hiring former student athletes.
It's a big thing.
They do. So I just find it crazy. I think at the end of the day, we can look at sports. There's people who look at sports and not see as an essential thing. And I see it as like an incredibly essential thing for anyone, for like little kids who have to, you know, be out. And, you know, again, I used to work at First Break a little bit down in Carson, like Mark Lucero and Rick Bukta. They have like the little nonprofit there. And, you know, I saw how important it was for those parents to have the kids like, hey, we have a place to send them in the afternoon. And all those kind of things, like you grow up, you know, I think it's just important for kids. What's the incentive if you're playing a sport that like you can't even go to college for? I'm not saying pros, because 90, again, 1% of people are good enough to make in pros. 1%, like 0.1%.
Yeah.
But 99% of people like are going to have a good time in college. And, we did with My Tennis is Here, we did the series of college interviews. And you'd see guys like Cameron Norrie, Mackie. They wouldn't have traded for anything, even though they would have been top 100, earlier probably. But they're like, yeah, those 3 years that I was there, I wouldn't have traded for anything. Like, I had a great time. I got it out of my system, and I'm 21, and I'm, out there playing. So,
right.
Again, there's a lot of feelings seeing those programs getting cut, because I don't think I ever thought of the fragility of of tennis. I always felt like, oh, tennis is like a big college sport, but it's not really, I guess. It's very like, and I don't want it to become like, my biggest fear is it becoming like volleyball, or even though volleyball is big, it doesn't have that many teams, or like one of those sports that like have only like a handful of teams. Oh, we don't have like 16 teams in the country. I think that would be terrible. I think that'd be really bad. Or, there's like the other ones, like lacrosse, I think is like that. There's like some sports that are really like, they're just so small. And they could grow as well. And I really wouldn't want tennis going from whatever, 150 teams plus D2, D3, all that to being like a really, really small, like kind of niche thing. So
during the U.S. Open this year, one of your fellow Bruins, Jen Brady, had an amazing run. She got stopped by, by your employer.
She had to lose.
I mean, that had to have been tough for you, because I know you and Jen were at UCLA at the same time. Y'all crisscrossed a little bit. But how important to college tennis was Jen's run at the U.S. Open, do you think?
I think it was really important, especially on the female side, because I think we are seeing more and more success on the male side from guys that are coming from college. I think a lot more challenger winners and guys on the top 100. But on the female side, still taking a little bit longer for, I think there's a lot of doubles girls, but I think the singles is still struggles a little bit. Getting those girls from college to really break through. And, I think her run can show that, like, I think on the women's side, there's still a lot of, like, oh, she's, like, 18, and that's why she's good, just because she's top 100. There's a lot of age things where the men's side is getting so much older that, like, 22 is very young, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And on the female side, 22, you don't win a slam? Who are you kind of thing? I'm like, no, it's not.
Well, that's because we've got Coco Gauff out there. We've got Amanda and Samova. I mean, we've got all these.
But they're so out of the curve. And I think it's important to tell yourself, like, look, there's some people who are out of the curve, and there's some people who the process takes longer. And Jenny is clearly that person. I mean, I was there with her at UCLA, and she obviously was a great player, but she's playing three. She wasn't even playing one.
Right.
She's playing three. And you could tell she was still, almost like immature to a certain way about, understanding the work that she needed to put in and all that. And I think she needed that time. I think she needed I don't know if she was there for 2 or 3 years, but she needed a little bit of time to, I think, get that together. And even the transition to the pros, I think, like, she got to top 100, but like she had like, a little bit of a drop, a fallout. And then now she finally, like, I think she started working with this German coach and, the preseason in Germany, all this stuff. And she really is understanding, the level of work she needs to put in. And she's 25 or not even, maybe 25, 24.
Yeah.
So I think that's just, it's so important to see, a semifinal of Slam. It's a huge accomplishment.
Huge. Like,
I can't remember anyone from college who's done this in quite some time. I don't know if Isner has done it but it was really nice to see. And it is just like opens your eyes. Again, a player who, she was good at UCLA. She was not number one. And I think a lot of the times where, you see commentators like, oh, it's almost like you have to play one for your school, otherwise you're not going to be good and things like that. I'm like, no, what I mean? You can play for a very good school, be at 2, 3, 4, whatever, and still, be able to compete and maximize your potential. And I think that's the important thing where you see it doesn't mean, you know, success is relative to, like, you know, it's what you think as success. I mean, there's what people will think, but there's your success. And there, for some players, maybe getting to 400 was a huge accomplishment that they never thought they would, but they came out of college just like a different player, like Dodd Kopfer. Mm-hmm. Kopfer played, I mean, who was Kopfer before he came to Tulane?
And holy cow, yeah, this week, right?
Yeah, I think he said it this week. He was like, yeah, I was not very good coming into college.
Yeah, he did say that.
He did say that. And then, yeah, he was, I mean, he was very good in college. He was like number one for 2 years, but he was very, very good after a couple years in college. And I was like, look, I mean, Kopfer, who was he? Like, no one understood why he was at Tulane.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is a guy who would be playing one for UCLA, for USC, for Virginia, for anyone. And so, you know, there's like so many guys and girls doing that now. And I think it's important to see, like, hey, making a third round of a slam these days, or making, you know, quarter, semi, top 100 is a big deal. They're going to make a living. They're doing well. Yes, they, you know, if someone is going to win a slam out of college, I mean, it might take a little bit of time. It's going to be tough. But, you know, for their personal development and their personal, like, achievements, I mean, it's incredible to see. Obviously, Marco's one of my good friends, finally broke top 100 this year after, you know, grinding it out on the tour. But, you know, I mean, I talk to the guy every day. Like, he wouldn't have traded his time at UCLA for anything. So it's like, it's very, very important. And I think, you know, cutting program is a really bad thing.
Well, you tweeted something about, you know, the importance of college tennis for personal growth. And I've kind of titled this podcast, you know, personal growth through college tennis. It's not just about, you know, as you said, getting better as a tennis player, but really getting better as a human, right?
Yeah.
Learning interpersonal skills, learning how to manage your life, learning how the adulting things, as you referenced. Yeah. And you know, to me, I love college tennis. There's so many things about it. I didn't play myself, but my son did. And for me, getting to go watch those matches was just incredible. And even still, going out to the college matches to me is thrilling, because there's a level of commitment and fight and that sense of doing it for something bigger than yourself that you don't get anywhere else in our sport. And
yeah, I think... I mean, I do believe that. I mean, we obviously have to look at tennis as product, and as an entertainment product, it is getting a little bit stale to a certain extent. It's like you have all these guys just always winning the same. They're always winning. You know, on the women's side, it's a little more refreshing. I think even I think their ratings are going up a lot, which is nice. But still, like, you know, someone sitting and watching a 5 hour match that, you know, they don't really care for the players. It's an affiliation problem. It's hard to, like, not like in team sports, you can affiliate yourself to your city. Your city has, like, the Lakers, the this and that. It's much easier. UCLA, USC, it's easier to affiliate yourself. So then you're going to go watch a UCLA tennis match and you're going to be into it. I remember, it wasn't last year. It was one of these matches against USC they played. I happened to be there. I was like, oh, I'm going to go watch. I got there late. I was like, I barely watched any of that. I think it was like the most exciting 30 minutes of tennis I've ever watched, and I played. And I was like on the edge. Like, I think it was Ben Goldberg clinched against Riley Smith. And it was wild. And I was like, oh, my God, those are the best times. And I look sometimes, I get nostalgic and watch like some of the old matches on YouTube of me or the guys playing the clinching, and I mean, things got rowdy. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And the celebration afterwards, we'll go back to our apartments, go crazy. And I think that's just really important. As a product, it's very entertaining. College tennis is a good entertaining product. It's just hard. I mean, it's hard to broadcast live. It's a little bit easier, but at the end of the day, it is fun. It is thrilling. And I think team events in pros are really successful. Like, people don't talk about it enough. The Relay
World Cup. Team Tennis had an amazing season.
Exactly.
This summer,
World
Team
Tennis, Laver Cup, ATP Cup. It's much easier to get like a country behind Dusan Lajovic Then, you know, when Serbia has Djokovic and Dusan Lajovic, they think about Djokovic. They don't really think about Dusan Lajovic. But when you put, hey, it's Serbia playing, then it doesn't matter who's there. They're going to be like all over it. I was there for the ATP Cup, and I was like, oh, my God, these people are getting wild. So it is much better. So I just think there's – I don't know exactly how to do it because, again, it's just a huge thing. But you can look at college tennis as a product and I don't know, still somehow try to expand it, try to make it, you know – I wouldn't say you can make it too profitable, but you can make it like a really fun product. And I think there's a lot of ways that you could implement that at, you know, at the higher level. The more players have this opportunity to play for, you know, for a team. A lot of players love playing those club events in Europe because you play in a team event and you make some money and you play for the team and they love it. So it's like we grow up, it's a loner sport. It is a very loner sport. And then you all of a sudden you have that, like, you know, you're almost like injected with adrenaline playing for a team. You're like, oh, yeah. Like, you know, it's not really like – it's not really about –
playing. Especially the men, y'all are
exactly. Oh my god, it gets wild.
Yeah,
but it's almost like, and I say to, you know, a lot of my students who want to play college, like, look, like, your pretty strokes are not going to win you matches in college. It's not where it's going. If you are crumbling under pressure, playing a second round at a level three, and that really gets to you, wait until you get to college, and people are screaming at you, and you're having to clinch a match, things like that, and that, I mean. Matches are won with, like, heart in college at the end of the day. And if anyone has that, I remember we added my senior year, we added Logan Staggs to the team. Little lefty, crazy backhand, like, just sliced and diced, but good for him. But he was, I mean, he was like Diego Schwartzman, smaller probably. And I was like, I knew when he came in, I was like, this guy's going to make a difference. I knew it. I knew it because he just competed. He was like kind of an ass on the court, to be honest. And he wouldn't lose. Yeah. Like, he came back from, like, I remember a 6-1, 5-2, 40 love match and just found a way, crawled his way back into the match. And you can tell, like, some guys are just good, like a Mackie. Yeah. Mackie is just good.
Right.
But there's some guys who are just perfect for college tennis, and it's entertaining to watch those guys. It doesn't matter if they're playing 6 or 1 or whatever. So it's fun, and I really like it. And I wish more people understood how fun it can be, you know?
Yeah. Well, so you're doing this work with Naomi right now, and at the same time, you've launched a new website with two other guys, MyTennisHQ, and I'm going to just pull it up on the screen for people that want to take a look at it. What was the reason for developing MyTennisHQ? What are you hoping to accomplish with it? And, you know, what's kind of your one-year plan with this project?
It kind of came – so my buddy Guy Hadlich, who he played at Pepperdine. He was number one for Pepperdine for many years. He is very, very smart guy, and he's always learning new skills different ways. And he learned about building websites and, like, that creating that sort of, like, you know, organic traffic, things like that. And he messaged me one day. He's like, look, I'm a guy who's I'm into, like, creative things like photography, videography. I love that kind of stuff. And it's like, look, you like doing that stuff. I know how to build the site and how to, you know, the formula to do those things. Like, why don't we just partner up? You and I obviously have a lot of experience in tennis. We have, you know, access to a lot of players, to, you know, obviously now with my work with Naomi, I have, you know, all this perspective that very few people have.
Right.
And it was like, hey, we can create, you know, content, tennis content that is built from players who've done it, who've played. Guy played not only at Pepperdine, but he played some on the tour before he decided to go to Pepperdine. And we understand, yes, we don't, you know, we didn't make the top 100, but we understand the challenges to that, you know, it takes to play pros, to play college, to play juniors, to train. So we were like, let's just, you know, provide, you know, good, solid information about tennis. On that perspective, I think tennis, there's a lot of people covering tennis that do really well. You, Crack Rackets. I think there's a fresh new, all these new faces that is fun to you know.
Especially now, right? COVID really opened up the kind of open the field.
Exactly. News, yeah. I think it's really nice. But it, just in terms of information, I think there's a lot of like iffy stuff when you like Google, you know, just technical things and all these kind of things that I'm just kind of like, what are they talking about? Is this very kind of clickbaity or whatever? Right. So I just like, I was just like, look, I like tennis. I like, you know, I always wanted to, part of me, you know, part of my personality is I always want to be someone who, you know, I think decides what I can do. And I think, you know, having this business is something that like, you know, hopefully it will become our main time job. Like that's, I mean, that is the goal.
Cool.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I kind of took over the YouTube stuff a little bit more. Okay. And I think, you know, the 1 year plan is still really, you know, putting out a lot of content, like how we're doing record reviews. I think that's something that a lot of people do online, but then you see someone, you know, who's obviously can play. And that's what we right. kind of got on the comments, like, oh my God, this is you can actually hit the ball. And you're talking about this racket.
Yeah, it's not like when I review a racket. Yeah, so, me and my 4.5 women's tennis. Yes, I understand.
And I think one thing that we are aiming at, and I kind of compare it to like, oh, sorry. But not now. One thing that I kind of compare about is like I'm an amateur golfer.
Okay. Right?
And I can Google all these things to make me better, but a lot of it will be just kind of gimmicky. And I don't know exactly what is right, what is wrong when I watch those videos.
Mm-hmm.
But as I'm teaching tennis, I'm like, I am thinking to the 4.5 person, to the, 5.0 person that how can I help you win more matches instead of like going into this rabbit hole of like, how can I hit my forehand like Federer?
Right.
Or things like that, I will, you know, I'm thinking more, you know, easy solutions to certain problems that I see. And I see, you know, a lot of the things like we cover and especially things I talk about in videos, it's things that I see in, you know, in my coaching. You know, I see not necessarily just from the kids, but from the parents. Like I have a lot of discussions, for example, I made a video about this. I'm like, I have a lot of discussions with parents like, hey, my kid shouldn't have lost to that person. He has such bad strokes and he's such a pusher, blah, 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 blah. I'm like,
heard that.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, like, what are you talking about? Like, all I'm hearing is that the other person was just a better competitor than your kid. So mm-hmm. you're blaming, you know, his or hers, strokes, but it's not necessarily what made him or her lose the match. It's more right. Other things, mental aspects, the heart, those kind of things.
Yeah.
And those are sort of issues that like I, again, with technique, for example, teaching technique online is tough, but I think everyone hits the ball a little bit different, but there are a few things that we can all think about, as a whole. So we do that. I mean, we do a lot of some of the articles we have are really for beginners, people who don't really know tennis at all. If you're looking for strings, if you're looking for
the rules of the game.
We have a lot of rules of the game. Yeah, we actually have a lot of rules of the game because people Google that stuff. And it is really a website that we're like, we want to provide the most quality information we can for people. And I think that's the goal. I mean, we obviously have our goals in terms of monetization and things like that with time, but not to the point that we're all okay. We don't have to sell you some terrible products just for the sake of it. So I think that's the goal. And eventually, I mean, we've talked about like 5-year plans of like, hopefully maybe one day having like a few courts, like our courts, maybe having like a My Tennis HQ Academy and, you know, that we can teach tennis, that we can do live ball workouts, do something like that. I think we have like, you know, more, not just online plans. We want to eventually get into maybe a physical part of My Tennis HQ, which is all like, I'm here. Guy's in Dallas, Austin Rapp, who also played at UCLA with me. He's in Austin now. He's the, I don't know if I can say it. I'll say it. He's the volunteer coach at Texas now.
He is?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know he was doing that. Good for him.
I'm honestly not sure if I can say that. But like,
well, you just did.
Come out. So,
Now everybody knows.
Exactly. So
you heard it first on Parenting Aces. Remember that.
Yeah, I'm not sure he announced it. Oh, whatever. So we all have this plan. So we're kind of scattered around right now. I mean, it's tough. We're, yeah, you know, 25, 26. So we're in that phase of life. But eventually, hopefully in the next 5 years, if we continue to see the growth, we want to, you know, maybe be in one location, all three of us, and, you know, make that our full-time job. So we're really excited. And I think the prospects have been nice. I mean, we're growing a good amount on YouTube as well. And I think the pandemic kind of wasn't great for us because there wasn't a lot of tennis. People weren't very curious about tennis at the time, but now it's getting better. So really, really fun project. And it was nice during the pandemic to have it as well, something to do.
Yeah.
So it's been really rewarding. I think we're having a good time. And I think it shows on the work that we're doing.
Yeah, no, it's great. And y'all have information on nutrition and all kinds of stuff, fitness stuff on there. A lot of the same categories of information that we have on Parenting Aces, but ours is geared toward junior in college. Y'all's is geared toward kind of anybody that needs
a lot, anybody. We want, you don't want to necessarily make it to, like, tennis can be a little overwhelming for
sure,
people, you know what I mean? Especially if you're just starting. And I think, you know, those players are often a little bit forgotten that way. It's like, for us, it's so easy to understand, like, oh, it's 40, 15, 30, 40. But then for someone who's never, it's like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, you have to win what? And then you have to win 4 points. But you have to win.
Is that your puppy points making all that noise?
Yeah, it's my puppy. Sorry.
Him. Bring him up. Oh, my goodness. Hi. What's his name?
River.
River. Hi. Oh, yeah, he's so cute.
Yeah, he slapped a lot, so he's starting to get a little bit.
It's playtime.
So yeah, it's one of those things that you know, it we forget. For us, it's so easy to know the rules, but for a lot of people, it's not.
Yeah.
So you know, that we're definitely, you know, aiming at those players, and also, like, I always liked gear. I liked rackets. I like testing rackets. I'm actually even switching to a new racket now. Because of all this testing, and you know, I like, you know, providing information that maybe I didn't have when I was, like, you know, playing, and, like, I didn't know anything about weighting rackets or balance and all that. I just kind of played without what felt good, but maybe it wasn't the right racket for me. So things like that. I think it's fun, and I think it's a good project, and especially with me traveling, like, I'll get a lot of access to, you know, watching pros and things like that. So it's been a good, but pretty fun thing, and I hope, like, we, you know, we can keep scaling and growing, and you know, just hopefully eventually becomes, like, a full-time thing for us.
Awesome. Well, for those of you watching that are interested, here's the link again to My Tennis HQ, and have a look. And Karu, where are you coaching when you're in LA? Who are you working? You mentioned
working
in Carson for a while.
Yeah, so, no, I work with a lot of juniors, mostly on the west side and Studio City a lot. I'm a lot in Studio City, actually. There's, like, a few players. It's just an easy midpoint there. LA is just big, so it's kind of hard to, like, it's just really hard to, like, be in your area. Like, I actually live far. I live down by the South Bay, but I end up having to drive a little bit.
You're close to me?
Yeah, I'm in like, Hermosa, North Redondo.
Nice. Yeah, nice.
But
so if people are interested in working with you, when you're in town, is there a way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I mean, if you go on my Instagram, I put there, I think I have my Instagram is Carusel, and I put just my email there. It's contact Karu, so contactkaru@gmail.com, so it's kind of easy.
So here's his Instagram, and it's contact, I'm going to type that in too, @gmail.com.
Yeah.
And here we go.
There you
go. Those of you
that'll be the easiest way. Yeah. Okay. I'm, like, you know, I have this one kid I've been working with for a long time. He's actually Brazilian, and, you know, it's like his dad. We're almost like family now. It's, like, really cool.
Nice.
And I have, like, a few other ones. So, you know, been pretty actually busy since I came back. Putting a lot of hours, so, but I, you know, I enjoy it, and it's a good time. But yeah, I mean, you can always, like, reach out to me, you know, if I have the time, obviously, we can figure something out. But, like, a lot there, and again, if I I wish I had some more down here where I'm at, like Manhattan Beach, Hermosa Beach.
Yeah.
It would be a little bit easier for me, but you know.
There you go. If any of our viewers live in that area, Karoo is looking for kids to work with down in the Bay. Well, Karoo, thank you so much for doing this. I'm so glad we finally figured out how to make it happen. It's been hit, miss. So congratulations to you on all of your amazing opportunities and growth. And it's been a pleasure to talk with you. It's fun to see you now out of college. I watched you in college. You were a rowdy kid.
4 years already. It's terrible. It's going by way too quickly. I'm like, oh my God, I'm literally 4 years out of college now. It's wild. I still feel like I was there, playing with the guys very recently. So it goes by really quickly. But it's a lot happened in this last 4 years. Coach played Naomi, there's a lot going on. And then when I'm traveling with her, I'm like, oh my God, I need to go play again. Cause you just get that,
you get that
drive again. So it's like, you never know, maybe 2021, I'll make a comeback. You never know.
There you go. We'll be out cheering for you.
Thank you. But yeah, it was great to chat with you.
You too. And to our viewers, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time on Parenting Aces. Bye-bye.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast. For tennis parents, by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.